I'ma say something real controversial right now. You listen to the radio? You listen to Trent Radio 92.7 CFFF FM in Peterborough, Ontario, Canada.
Say what?
Say what? It's Trent Radio, baby.
Well, good afternoon, girls and boys and those in between. This is Web Madman back with you for another week of Art Space Noise Space. Got a few things to talk about this week, one of which is next Saturday is the Art Space annual 50-50. And this is something that Art Space does annually and has been doing for a very long time. The basic idea is that local artists submit pieces people buy tickets that includes basically a piece of artwork. And there's a draw to see who gets to pick their piece of artwork first. And it's a nice night of fun and excitement and lots of art. And of course the proceeds, 50% goes to the artist and 50% goes to Art Space. So, it's good all around. Everyone gets something and, you get a piece of artwork, the artist gets some money and, Art Space gets some money. That's pretty good, eh? That's again going to be next Saturday, April 18th. And, in the meantime, starting on Wednesday, there's going to be a sneak preview, you can go and start checking out what is going to be available. So you can go and start to see if there's some artwork that you would really dig. And of course, go out and buy yourself a ticket so that you can then come out and have a good time and walk away with a piece of art. Isn't that sound like fun? And of course, we also have there's a silent auction, and we have balloons that have wonderful prizes by various local businesses and such. So lots of things that you can walk away with, which is kind of exciting. The other thing coming up is that Full Metal Booty is going to be playing at The Spill on the 22nd of April. So we're going to have another show between then and now, but I just wanted to give you guys the heads up so that you can book. That's the 22nd of April. And apparently there's going to be three or four drone bands coming. From various parts of Europe, and so they'll be playing, and Full Metal Booty will be closing out the show. So an interesting evening of various sounds and excitement. So make sure to come on out to that. Meanwhile, I'm just going to queue up or find some stuff to queue up in the background. You know, I hate just having a voice. It's kind of like watching television with talking heads. It's like, give me something more exciting than that, eh? Now, the other thing that some of you may have been able to catch is that Full Metal Booty did Trent Stock earlier this week, which was kind of fun and was well received. I, of course, didn't have a lot of sleep, so after Full Metal Booty finished, I just kind of caught the bus home. But it sounded like it was a pretty fun time. Now I've got Pilot K9 coming in now, who just had his show, of course. He, of course, was also there at the Trent Stock. Ended up having to head out as well.
We wanted to get our stuff back to Art Space.
Yeah.
We had a ride.
Yeah.
But it had to be before 4 or after 6.
Right. So, yes, unfortunately, we don't have a transporter beam to get us around with all of our stuff.
Not anymore. We lost it.
Yeah, I know. You know, downsizing.
Budget cuts,
you know. Because, you know, Full Metal Booty, we had such an enormous budget at one point in time.
Right.
We are, of course, being extremely facetious on that front. We're like the living definition of DIY, I think.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. and actually, in point of fact, Hartley has a new stand-up bass.
Made out of a broken lamp.
Yeah, made out of a broken lamp.
And weed whip.
Nylon
cord.
Yeah, and I even saw a popsicle stick in there.
Yeah, well, the shade part of the lamp is turned upside down,
mm-hmm.
and that acts as a resonator.
Mm-hmm.
So it has to stick a microphone inside that to pick it up.
And, of course, Hartley is infamous for his postmodern stand-up bass, which was, of course, the back of a TV set.
And a canoe paddle.
And a canoe paddle. Which always gets lots of people interested whenever we play, and people haven't seen it before. It's like, whoa.
What the hell is that?
Exactly. It's right up there with your multi-ardened turntables.
Yeah, I had a really tough time in the wind.
In the wind, I know. Well, I was wearing my poncho because it was really cold.
Yeah. Well, I had to take my jacket off because I needed to move.
Right.
But the wind lifted records right off the platters. And one of them actually went, started spinning. It was rolling down a ramp and into the vending area. And somebody rescued it.
Wow. That's kind of like the, what is it, on top of spaghetti, the meatball song?
Uh-huh.
rolled off of the table and onto the floor.
Mm-hmm. And then my poor record rolled right out the door.
That's right. There's a future classic in that, I think.
Oh, I hope not.
Meanwhile, anything new and exciting that you've been picking up?
I saw my first yard sale today.
Ooh, it's that time of year again, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a dangerous time for me.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you were mentioning the giveaway at Sadler House coming up.
That's coming up. That's next Sunday.
Okay.
The 19th at Sadler House at George and Park Hill.
Yeah.
And let's see, that it goes from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m.
Wow.
And that's all the stuff that students are leaving behind.
Right, right.
It could include lots of books, stereos, clothing.
Right. All kinds of stuff that, yeah.
Food.
Yep. Yes, because also on Sunday, I was noticing that the Mysterious Entity play, My Gender Assignment, is actually going to be playing in the afternoon. Because I was thinking that the only performance of it was going to be the Saturday night, which was the 50-50. So
right.
I was pleased to see that I'm going to be able to catch it on in the afternoon. And I would recommend that to others as well. It's going to be at 2 o'clock. Tickets are, what? $10?
$10 at the door.
Because the monitor is between me and the poster there, so you can see it better than me.
Right.
Yeah, and it's a Mysterious Entity production who do lots of stuff to do with orientation, gender, all those sorts of things, and sort of try to get us all thinking about that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think is important. I was kind of excited to see that Lester Alfonso is in it.
Right.
Yep. Who, of course, is a good friend.
Yeah, I definitely want to go see that next Sunday.
Yep. Because also on the Lester front, also very excited about the Instant Video project. Right now they're just using some of the older videos because they're taking a little bit of a break.
Right.
But they're definitely going to be continuing with this kind of live video.
Right. Well, it's kind of putting a lot of pressure on yourself to do that every week.
It's true. It's true. It's not uncommon for Tammy, though. She's set herself up for that in the past. Like,
right.
Like generally with her and Lester, Lester had a radio show for a while, Radio Free Peterborough, or Radio Free Download, that was it.
Right.
And that challenged Tammy to do a song a week. And there's a CD from that actually called Radio Days. So I think Tammy really likes that sort of challenge. She's got a huge portfolio of songs that she's written over
right.
the years and likes the challenge of trying to come up with something spontaneous. And like I was saying, I think I was talking to you before about our history with Zed, the show on CBC television.
Right.
That was actually one of the first kind of television shows to embrace the internet, at least in Canada. And in the initial stages, actually showed a lot of user-uploaded content on the weekly show. And the whole idea was to try and highlight, you know, sort of this Canadian content.
Right, but it didn't last. What happened?
I suspect that they ran into issues around licensing and copyright issues. Right. And I think that they kind of jumped into it with both feet and then kind of realized, like, ooh, there's some implications here. And because initially there was a lot more user content that was shown on the national broadcast, but that eventually got replaced by more and more of kind of like international shorts and those sorts of things that were licensed more directly.
Right.
And so the actual content from the website started to sort of fade more and more. That's my suspicion anyways, because they never did actually give any official explanation as to what happened there. Because the point being is that Tammy and Lester were heavily featured on Zed. And then my other friend, Dave Meisner, who was from the Convertible Robots, at one point actually went into the studio. And were kind of live guests on Zed.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, yeah. Some of the other guests on the show included Buck 65, Lesbians on Ecstasy. It was quite an interesting and dynamic show, showcasing a lot of like interesting talent that you just never got to see otherwise.
Since you mentioned Convertible Robots, are they still playing together?
They were taking a break, and over the next year, they're planning on getting back together, actually.
Good.
I met up with Dave. He's in the Von Dratz, and they played...
you told me about that extremist surf music?
Yes. I went with my friend Marley, and who's a metalhead. And at one point, he's like, my God, I get it. Surfer music was the heavy metal of the 50s.
Definitely. They were early on experimenting with distorting their guitars.
Mm-hmm.
Or ultra treble boost.
Yep. And super fast.
Right.
Yep. And certainly the stuff that the Von Dratz were doing is very much had a really dark edge to it.
Yeah,
and there was. I mean, even there's the Flintstones episodes with, what was that?
The Way Outs.
The Way Outs, right? Had this ghoulish kind of image going on.
Yeah,
is that them or that? There was another band in there too, right? That were kind of ghoulish looking and played this kind of like creepy surfer kind of stuff.
I don't know.
Yeah, might have been The Way Outs. It's been so long since
it's
I saw that stuff.
It's been a long time. Well, yeah. That's why God gave us the internet.
It's true.
A weird thing about Hanna-Barbera,
mm-hmm.
they had musical guests on the Flintstones.
Yeah.
Well, it was the 60s.
Yeah.
They had musical guests show up on some of their other shows.
Mm-hmm.
So they started putting out records.
Yeah.
And then they started branching out to make records by real bands.
Oh, yeah.
And they put out the first record by the 13th Floor Elevators.
Oh, really? Because I know, refresh my memory, because I know that name for sure.
They were a legendary kind of psychedelic punk band in Texas.
Uh-huh.
Apparently were the first to use the word psychedelic to describe their music in posters.
Right.
Beating the Grateful Dead by about 3 months.
Wow. Who then were the Warlocks, right?
Right.
Yeah.
So the Elevators made... I think three albums,
mm-hmm.
but right from the beginning, they were they had a pyramid in the eye and a rant about drugs for maintaining sanity, DMT, LSD, and so on.
Right. Better living through chemistry.
Yeah, well, something went wrong. Their manager apparently used to vacuum out their bus every time they went out because he didn't want them to get busted.
Okay.
Eventually, Rocky Erickson, the singer and guitarist, did get busted.
Mm-hmm.
Tried to claim that he was insane and in contact with Martians.
Oh, yeah.
So they put him in the nut house instead of jail.
Oh.
But they also subjected him to...
electroshock therapy and
major
everything else.
Drugs.
Yep.
And...
what's the 60s, after all?
It really wiped him out.
Yeah.
And he was just a mess for decades afterwards.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But apparently he's back. He's got his life together.
Right.
He's on the right medication this time. And he's doing a lot better.
Oh, good, good. Yeah, no, I remember actually at one point seeing a documentary where they were talking, like, people would hear the phrase, you know, not guilty by reason of insanity.
Right.
And what a lot of people didn't realize is that in some ways that could be a lifetime unlimited sentence.
Yeah.
Because you would get checked in and there was no parole, there was no getting out.
Right.
So when people hear like, oh, they were found not guilty by reason of insanity and that was like a cop-out, it's like, well, do you really realize, well, at least back then what that meant?
Right.
Was that you were basically thrown in a nut house and they threw away the key. So just as a kind of tangent on that, I don't know what the scoop is in this day and age, though.
I wouldn't like to find out.
No, exactly. Well, because ECT, as they're calling it now, is back in vogue.
Yeah.
And although, I mean, I don't know. I've heard mixed reports. Some people actually say that it works. I'm very doubtful, but whatever works for you.
I wouldn't like to experiment.
No, it's right up there with trepanation in my book. That's the drilling of a hole in your head, right?
Well, have you seen that video, A Hole in the Head?
No, but I remember when Brent Bamberry, his final episode of Brave New Waves,
right?
He dedicated the entire show to telling that story.
It's a pretty far out story.
Yeah.
One of the guys was his pseudonym. I don't know his real name, but mm-hmm. he called himself Michael Hollingshead.
Yep.
As in Michael Hole in His Head.
Head. Yep.
And he showed up at Leary's place.
Okay.
When they had the mansion.
Ah.
And took LSD with everyone, but recommended that they drill holes in their skull, like him.
Yep. Well, because there's an old Mondo video about brain surgery in tribal culture. And that was one of the... They would drill a hole in the head and then make the person lay upside down so that the demons would drop out.
Yeah.
Which, strangely enough, could work. They were showing how, like, with brain tumors and stuff like that, that there was evidence that you could actually utilize that type of technique.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was pretty far out. Mm-hmm. I'm amazed that it heals. That the guy didn't even wash his hands.
No. Yep. Well, realizing that the idea of sanitization in hospitals is relatively recent, spookily recent.
Right.
Just...
But the trepanation has been going on in various places for a long time.
Yeah.
Like there's 10,000-year-old skulls from Peru that have been cut open and the person is healed.
Yep. Yeah, there's evidence that like that the hole didn't cause the death. That it was. Mm-hmm. You just never know. Lots of.
Well, the whole theory with the modern group is that by relieving pressure on your brain, you allow more blood into your brain, and it makes you permanently high.
Right. Yes, which in this story of Michael Hollingshead, which was the one that Brent Bamberry was telling.
Right.
Definitely. Now, there seemed to be a lot of psychedelic drug use sort of leading up to it.
Are you surprised?
No. At the same time, I don't know. Like, my own experience with those things is just like, okay, power tools? No. Power tools and self-surgery? Way over the no line. But it does take all kinds out there, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Because I guess then he went on to do, like, lectures, like a lecture series.
Yeah, and he was, I think, removed from several countries for his controversial opinions.
Right. Endorsement of, as I said, something that I myself react to, like, psychedelics, power tools, self-surgery. Just not a combination I want to go into.
No.
Yeesh. But yeah, that's like I said, there's lots of people out there that try all kinds of different things.
I read about a guy who committed suicide with a power drill, but he drilled the first hole and he didn't die.
No, I know.
So he had to drill 7 altogether before he finally died.
Yeah, no, it's not. Well, because this guy, Michael Hollingshead, the first time he tried to do it on his own.
Yeah.
Passed out from the pain, so realized, okay, I'm going to need someone to help me with this.
Yeah, who can I get to help me with a project like this?
Wow. And yeah, no, I mean, if you're the person, you know, he ends up... you know, if someone dies, it's just...
How do you explain it to the authorities?
Exactly. No, he wanted me to do this.
He said it was safe.
Wow. That's kind of crazy. But, there's some crazy stuff out there. Now, on a more sort of sane approach, I've been sort of immersing myself again in Daniel Pinchbeck.
Do you have that book, Breaking Open the Head?
I had a copy of it many years ago when I was living at Dragonfly, which was right after it first came out.
I've loaned it to somebody and can't remember who.
Right, because it's out there. Well, if you go online, there's numerous from the matrixmasters.com. There's
the text online?
It's audio.
It's
Burning Man lectures, actually. And so a lot of, like, that's one of the things that Pinchbeck's been doing every year is going to Burning Man and doing these, lectures and dialogues and stuff that are just fascinating. Alex Gray is also plugged in. So there's some, every year there's a new batch of these awesome lectures and discussions.
We've got to take Full Metal Booty to that.
Yeah, although, I mean, I'm fascinated by it, but it's just way out of my price range. I mean, not even including actually getting there.
Right.
The actual entrance fee to the thing is like, you know, 100 plus US. It's not a cheap endeavor. Mm-hmm. The other side of that is that, you know what we might want to tap into more so is the Ohm crew. The reunion stuff.
All right.
Yeah. So I haven't actually been, like, I went to Ohm many, many years ago, probably the last year that it was still Ohm, the Ohm Festival.
Right.
Because now it's changed gears, where it's more of a community gathering than an electronic music festival, which is what it was kind of in its first...
That's how it started,
That's how it started. But the organizers felt that it just got too large and out of hand in a way that they didn't want, and so kind of pulled it back again. And so now what it is that you actually become a member of this, you know, kind of community organization, and it's the membership that allows you to come to the gathering. And so it thins out the numbers, and sort of you have to volunteer so many hours a time, et cetera, et cetera. So it's shifted gears, but I think that certainly it might be an idea to do a pitch for Full Metal Booty to come and do something.
Yeah, definitely, I think so.
Mm-hmm. I know that they do try to set up off the grid electrical using solar, wind, etc.
Wind power.
I know that there's a few stages that have some solar panels as well. Like,
right.
Because I mean, that would be part of it. I mean, we can do acoustic to our own crazy way, but certainly being amplified and of course your turntables and stuff, it would be...
Yeah, I can't do an acoustic with that.
No, but you have a lot of noise toys, so
sure, yeah.
In the past when we've done acoustic jams, you've been able to sort of pick up stuff and
junk metal percussion.
Yeah.
And my 9mm glockenspiel.
Right. Oh, yeah. Which is quite popular with people that kind of come in and...
And it's broken now.
Oh. That's the thing with popular things.
I got to get to my bamboo xylophone.
Oh.
I got that for $5 at a yard sale last year, but all the strings are coming undone, and the tubes, they knock against each other, and you don't get a clear sound out of
it. Yeah, yeah. Is that... Somewhere in the Archbase storage back end sort of thing there.
Is anyone good at macrame?
I used to be.
That would be helpful.
Oh, I haven't done it in years, but I used to be really good at it. That was my main craft as a kid.
Wild?
Yep. Macrame and crochet. My grandmother was the knitting master.
Yeah.
I tended to go with the side ones. Macrame and crochet.
I came across an article that I meant to bring it for you one time.
Mm.
It's this mathematician, this woman from Latvia or someplace.
Oh, yeah.
Who's not only a mathematician and physicist, but a great knitter.
Yeah.
And she helps people visualize sort of negatively curved space and infinite surfaces by knitting.
Knitting. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, interesting. Well, because there's a famous interview that I heard with Ram Dass.
Uh-huh.
Where he was talking about giving this like crazy lecture on spirituality and stuff and talking about altered state of consciousness and, you know, all of that freaky far out stuff, right? And he said that there was this little old lady in the front row who was just like right there with him and nodding with everything and really getting it. And afterwards, she was coming by and, you know, doing the meet and greet thing, and she was, you know, really into it, and he was like, how, you just don't seem like the type. Like, how is it that you're, you know, into this stuff? And she leaned over and very conspiratorially whispered to him, I knit.
Man.
Yeah. And to be honest, I mean, I got it immediately because I remember watching my grandmother and she would sit there and counting. Because it's all about counting, right? And she would get into this kind of trance state almost while she was knitting, and would just do it like it would be almost a blur. Her hands would be almost a blur. Mm-hmm. She'd be doing it just so fast and just be just lost in it.
Knit your way to a higher power focus.
That's right. Yep. Which, I mean, on some levels doesn't surprise me because I have always seen math's roots are actually in spirituality.
If you go back to Pythagoras, yeah.
Yeah, no, exactly. And, I mean, as you know, I've very much studied the Kabbalah and the Tree of Life and stuff, and that's
right.
The root of the modern decimal system in its own way, and especially when the Arabs invented zero, which was actually embedded in there but was only talked about in the secret inner whatever.
Yeah, the inner.
Yeah. So zero was a taboo until...
Well, only for the initiated.
Yes. Yeah. And that's where, you know, it was during the Ottoman Empire where there was just like this explosion of science and art and crazy stuff there that tends to get very glossed over in this day and age. That was where zero sort of was birthed. And to me, like that sort of gave rise, of course, to the Industrial Revolution and the Renaissance. Like, there's like, so many things that flowered out of that.
Well, just decimal numbers make multiplication possible.
Exactly.
Have you seen people try and multiply with Roman numerals?
Well, yeah. No.
It's a mess.
No, because it was meant for counting.
Right.
Basic addition and subtraction, bookkeeping. Right? It was, you know, that kind of...
Yeah, but you still have to multiply. You're doing inventory times cost or
yeah,
whatever.
But, I mean, again, it's, you know, that was the high end of that early form of math in its own way, right? Because, of course, the Pythagorean stuff was all fractions. It was all ratio.
Right.
Right? And so it was ratio mathematics. So, you know, like I say, I mean, we've come to... This kind of modern age where we've kind of separated some of those kind of early roots of these things.
Well, there's just too much knowledge now.
Right.
I mean, it's a couple of hundred years before since you
yep.
could be like a general scientist.
That's right.
A natural scientist is what they were usually called.
Yeah.
That included chemistry, physics, biology.
The jack of all trades, right?
Uh-huh.
Which now everything is hyper, hyper specialized, right? Part of it is I was watching a documentary on Newton, and in the documentary they were talking about his alchemical phase, which precedes him inventing calculus. It was funny because in the documentary they were talking about how he wasted, you know, all these years doing alchemy, but it's like, well, No, alchemy is an experiential thing that allows you to open up to other things. And so my take on it is that it was those years doing alchemy that allowed him to visualize things that gave birth to calculus. And
well, alchemy is about transformation.
That's right.
Calculus is about continuous change. Transformation.
That's right. Yeah. So it completely makes sense that he just, you know, was using this kind of experiential stuff, because alchemy is very physical and it's very, right. You know, engaging in that.
It's also very psychological.
Yeah.
I like reading about how Carl Jung, when he was discovering and putting together his theory of archetypes, he came across an alchemical text, beautiful pictures in them.
Yeah.
And at some point he realized that
they were
like 400 or 500 year old drawings of the same archetypes he was discovering.
Yep. No, exactly. And I mean that is part of what is kind of cool, creepy, freaky, is when you start to see these kind of like repetitions, right? Where you come up with something, it's like, wow, that's really cool. And then you see these echoes of it throughout all these other cultures all over the place. And it's, which is, of course, what Jung was referring to with the archetypes, right? Is that there's like these sort of key symbols that seem to emerge within the context of various cultures. So that every culture has their own way of finessing it and contextualizing it.
Right.
But underneath there are these like, whoa, core kind of ideas or you know, whatever they are.
There's Parker.
As you mentioned Parker, we've had lots of very interesting conversations around, you know, math and psychology.
Well, he should be on this show too.
It's true. No, and I was going to mention that there was a, what day was that? It was ages ago that I was away for the Saturday or was busy. And
Parker and I stayed on the show. Yeah.
Yeah, continued to have the conversation, which I was very pleased with. It was like, right on.
That was good.
Mm-hmm.
Hey.
Hey.
Do you want to come on the air?
Sure.
We are, I was just mentioning the invention of zero.
The invention of zero?
Zero.
Zero. Oh, okay.
Yeah. Those crazy Arabs, eh?
Crazy useful Arabs.
Crazy useful Arabs, that's right. And
hey folks.
Hey. I was also mentioning the documentary that I was watching on Newton and how he had spent years doing alchemy before then inventing you're on a short leash over there.
Yeah, I'm definitely on a short leash.
These ones. They got a longer cord.
Okay, that'll do. Thanks a bunch.
Switching it up. Yeah, and so I was speculating that his years of doing alchemy actually helped him visualize what ended up becoming calculus.
Yeah, definitely. Well, yeah. Like, then I don't think science and quack science were as
separate.
Right? Yeah. You could be a, you know, top-ranking quack scientist and a scientist.
Yeah. Well, because, of course, I mean, that was, it was an open field, and none of this had been mapped out yet, and so...
Well, there were a few governing bodies to... enforce discipline and
right.
correct opinions and stuff.
Right, right. Yeah. Because we were also mentioning the archetypes, Jungian archetypes, and how once he was going back through and discovering all these alchemical drawings and how he was starting to realize, like, oh, wait a minute.
This was psychology this back was, in the day.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Or what we now call psychology.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But at that point in time, the physical and mental weren't completely separated.
Yeah.
You know, they were still very much enmeshed. And I see it at that this is where the experiential nature of initiation, ceremony, and stuff like that have these direct kind of psychological implications that, you know, can allow you to...
The initiation into a secret society is definitely a consciousness-changing and life-changing experience. It's meant to be. It has to be.
Yeah. And that's where... And I see those processes as sort of neutral. It's like a tool, right?
Right.
And as they say, any tool can be a weapon if it's held right.
Yeah.
And because on a certain level, it's like Alcoholics Anonymous, right? The whole idea of going somewhere and getting all this stuff off of your chest in a group environment. Right?
Yeah.
In some ways can relate to these secret societies like the Skull and Bones Club, where you go lay in a coffin and reveal your darkest secrets to this inner group of people. It's incredibly empowering.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, it can also be used against you.
Yeah, and I find with a few people I know that are in AA, they're very like addicted to AA now, as yeah. opposed to drinking.
That's
know, they,
right.
They can't survive without it. So, yeah. you know, it's a life-changing experience, but it's a symbiotic relationship that you become a parasite in.
Yeah, no, exactly. And that's where, you know, the consciousness needs to come into play, where it's just yeah. like...
Well, the same thing with Scientology.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Oh, very much so.
I've read William Burroughs' essays, Naked Scientology.
Oh, yeah.
And well, what he's pointed out is that there are definitely useful exercises
yeah.
To clear what's called your reactive mind.
Yeah. But unfortunately, with Scientology, they clear away the old reactions and imprint new ones.
Yeah. Yeah, self-serving reactions that'll make you give them all your money.
Yeah,
they don't, you know, give you a nice survival toolkit or anything, no. from what I understand.
Yeah.
One interesting thing about Scientology is they donated all their books to Trent Library.
Oh, yeah.
What?
And Trent Library threw them out.
Oh.
So, like, they gave us them in duplicate and triplicate, all of L. Ron Hubbard's works. No, his Scientology works, well, not yeah. his sci-fi
yeah.
works.
Yeah.
And, so when they were throwing them out, I grabbed a copy of each of them, and I now have like, you know, 20 L. Ron Hubbard books at home.
Interesting. I'd be very curious to read some of that.
Yeah.
Because I agree that there's some...
I'd be very curious to skim that.
Well, because L. Ron Hubbard drew from some very powerful stuff,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, he, you know, was a megalomaniacal... .. But
yeah,
and so twisted it all to his own sort of thing. But
sure. Well, he was right from the beginning. He didn't get corrupted by power.
No, no, no.
He was corrupt to begin with.
Yeah, and seeking power.
I like that.
Because I mean the whole story between him and Jack Parsons and mm-hmm. all of that. You know, because I think that again, you know, like they were playing with some very powerful stuff. Whether you want to call it magic, psychoanalysis, whatever, it still has, in the end, some very powerful and profound changes that you can utilize. I mean, it goes back to Aleister Crowley, his Equinox magazine.
Mm-hmm.
The byline was, "The goal of religion through the method of science."
Yeah.
Wow. and of course, that's the precursor to the idea that your belief paradigm informs your reality, right? And so if you can try on different belief structures consciously and see what the effect
and
is.
Test them out in some way.
Exactly.
Right. Well, like in the exercises of Prometheus Rising by Robert Anton Wilson.
Yeah. Yes.
I was flipping through that at a friend's place, and one exercise I really love is, you know, listen to some relaxing music, go to a sauna, have a sauna, work out a little, and repeat forever.
Ah, nice.
That's a good exercise.
Yeah, repeat once a week forever.
Right. Nice. That's
an incredible exercise. Most people don't think that they should do that, you should do that once a week.
Right.
Sauna and listen to relaxing music.
Nice. Chill.
Yeah, just chill out.
Chill
Make
out.
A point of doing this and you'll feel better. But there's also other ones, you know, like explain how the Pope is actually a descendant of Hitler. And you know, there's a lot of weird stuff in that book.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I have...
It's not a descendant, they're cousins.
Oh, yeah, they're cousins.
Well, because there's one of the more recent books of Wilson was the Quantum Psychology.
Yep.
Which sort of takes where he started with Prometheus Rising and sort of turns it into a group exercise.
Oh, interesting.
To get people in the group to start applying maybe logic.
Oh, okay. Yep.
Right. Which in Prometheus Rising, that's the undercurrent, but he hadn't completely developed that idea yet.
Yep.
Because in the end, if you go through even just a few of the exercises in Prometheus Rising, in the end, you just start going, okay, my reality is subjective.
Yeah.
I can't convince myself any longer that it's objective.
Well, that's good. I mean, you don't want to convince yourself that it's objective, then you stop learning things.
That's right. No, exactly. And that's Robert Anton Wilson's whole point from start to finish, really. I mean, I remember in the early 70s, he was going around turning everyone into a pope, right?
Yeah.
All right. Everyone in his movement could become...
A pope.
A pope.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a Discordian cabal here, yeah. And they're all popes.
Yeah,
I like this. I think this is great.
No, it's true because I mean it reclaims your own power and doesn't give you the authority over anyone else.
Yeah. Now it's just an epaulet, but if you think of yourself as a pope of the Discordian Church, then you've got yourself in a very like you kind of remember that you have your own spiritual control.
And that's right.
Like, it's your ability. It's your spirituality that you need to decide on.
Yeah.
Are you familiar with the Neo-American Church?
No.
They started in the '60s, and well, they were never formally recognized as a church because they took LSD as a sacrament.
Mm-hmm.
And their only hymn was "Row, row, row your boat gently down the stream."
Brilliant! Oh, that's gorgeous.
But everyone who was ordained in the church was a boohoo.
Oh yeah.
Sort of helps them keep them.
A boohoo.
Like, yeah, you can't take yourself too seriously if you're a boohoo.
That's true.
One of my friends gave me a bit of a rant that I think makes a whole whack of sense. That the tinfoil hats thing, you know, mm-hmm. to like stop brain programming from coming in from, you know, government satellites and stuff.
Right.
It works. It's true. And the reason is that when you're wearing a tinfoil hat, you feel so silly that the programming won't work anymore.
Oh, that's brilliant.
Yeah, I like it a lot.
Yeah. Well, because interestingly enough, when I was in college in the late 80s, mm-hmm. There was at one point we did this experiment where we went outside with just an antenna and a non-amplified meter, right? So
yep.
No power in it at all. Right, and you point this antenna at the CN Tower, and the meter goes off the scale.
Wow!
Because there is a huge amount of radio,
yeah,
waves coming off of that thing, right? So,
yeah, yeah, you look at the top of it, and there's just tons of satellites.
Well, that
enough,
bubble.
It's enough to cook meat if you get too close.
That's right. No,
really?
Oh yeah.
Wow! I want to cook a steak on the CN Tower.
Ooh-hoo. But it's that white bubble, right?
Oh, okay. Yeah.
That is completely full of dishes. Mm-hmm. And antenna and stuff, right? But my professor was talking about how, well, if you want, and this is the first time I'd ever heard about the idea of a tinfoil hat, because he talked about wearing a foil hat that had a wire that went down to your shoe that you could then put a grounding pad. And as long as you kept a foot on the streetcar track, you could ground out and protect yourself from any of the radio waves.
Wow.
What do you have to do to protect yourself from getting hit by a streetcar?
Yeah.
Keep your eyes open.
Wait, why a streetcar track, though? It just has to be conductive and grounded.
Exactly. And so he was making a reference where in Toronto, of course, there's streetcar tracks everywhere, and those tracks
are all covers.
Yeah, yeah. So
sewer drains.
Yeah. No. So he was just making the reference that the streetcar track is one example of a piece of grounded, you know, sort of metal that you could put your foot on. As a side note, I was going to say that I just got finished reading an interview on alterati.com, an interview with William Morrison. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that he brought up that I was quite fascinated by was that him and Ogre and Genesis Peorage founded an arts collective based on The Process, which was this thing back in the 70s.
Wait, The Process with a capital P?
Yes.
Okay.
And The Process Church was this thing in the 70s.
Oh, okay.
That there was this infamous book that linked them with Charles Manson and claimed that they were Satanists going around killing people, et cetera, which of course was...
The head of The Process was a guy who took the name Robert de Grimston.
Yeah.
And Manson once claimed that he and Robert de Grimston were the same person.
Right. Yeah. And so completely false. But
at
any rate, what's interesting that's come out of it is that they were contacted by one of the guys, Doug Mesner, and they are working on a full-length documentary.
Oh, about The Process.
The Process.
Cool.
Adam Parfrey, Feral House, is also releasing a book about the church.
Yeah.
It says Feral House. That's his printing company. But Process Media, I've never heard of before. That must be new.
Yeah, and I think that this is what's happened is that they've, you know, when they got together, well, especially somebody like Genesis Peorage, that's his whole thing, is creating magic out of organization.
Right.
Yeah.
But you know that The Process was an offshoot of Scientology.
In its own sort of way. I mean, do you know the tenets of it? Like, I remember reading a couple of the books, and one of the processes that was really interesting is they'd put you in a room, and you'd have to confront the four elements of yourself. And I'm trying to remember, but it was like they split the Jesus and the Christos and Satan and the devil. And the process was actually being able to completely encompass all of those things, realizing that those are parts of yourself and that you have to embrace all four elements of yourself.
Right. And on a more exoteric level, they also claimed things like through love, God and Satan have reconciled all differences.
Right.
And
yes.
It's time for the final judgment.
Exactly. And so it was external and internal. So the whole idea was that you would go through the process yourself.
And that would bring the process about globally.
Exactly.
So that whole as above, so below.
Exactly.
Thing. Yeah.
Nope.
There's something also odd about them is that they were very active in Toronto in the early 70s.
Yeah.
And they also dressed in black and did a lot of heroin.
Yep.
And had big dogs.
Yeah, I was just going to say the big dogs, big Dobermans.
Oh, God.
Yeah, one article I read credited them with inventing the goth look.
Yeah, very much so. They very much were precursors to that whole goth thing. Yeah. Yeah.
Very fun and very weird.
Yeah.
But, heroin, man. That's not a good thing for your church to be affiliated with.
No, I know. And you see... I think I'm the one of the only people that read Burroughs and went, I never want to do heroin.
Yeah.
Like
I actually, when I read Naked Lunch, I was like, man, do I ever want to do heroin? Wait, no.
Exactly. No, exactly.
But the thing you have to realize is that for every good word he wrote about it, he wrote 100 bad ones.
Exactly.
You know?
No, yeah, yeah. And I think that for me, the undercurrent to the whole thing was like, don't go there. It's not worth it. Yeah. You know, if you can find another way to tap into these things, go that way.
Try the process, maybe.
Exactly.
I was going to say when they were in Toronto, it's at the same time that Funkadelic and Parliament lived in Toronto.
Oh, right.
And there's actually records here.
Yeah.
The original vinyl with you open them up and there's Funkadelic and there's process literature.
Wow.
Weird.
There was just some crazy cross-pollination that went on at one point, eh?
Yeah.
Because I do know that there was some very groovy, crazy, weird things going on in Toronto in the, like, 60s and 70s. Part of the reason that I know is because of living at Dragonfly, this commune up in the bush, that had connections to the Toronto anarchist kind of scene. And so there was all these, like, crazy periodicals, obscure books, all of that stuff.
Has that collection been maintained?
I don't know.
Is it in some kind of order, or did they...
It was when I left. But that was a long time ago. And I've heard bad rumors about things being thrown out. So
no.
I'll have to go and see. I can't say for sure.
How long did you live in Dragonfly?
Overall, 5 years.
Wow.
But I grew up in the area. So spent a lot of time there. That was where I kind of had my it drew me away from my redneck roots.
Yeah. Yeah.
Looked way more interesting on that side.
Fair enough.
Yeah. But this day and age is very cool because there's a whack of new land co-ops. The Blackfly Collective is quite intriguing. They're setting up an eco-village up there. And yeah, it's very exciting. And actually, as a side note, the interesting thing with this this arts collective that I was mentioning with the process is that it seems like there's a lot of like this kind of reintegration of social movement and creative culture.
That's what I really dig about the group Crime Think. They're really cool that way.
Yeah.
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 Crime Think?
Crime Think. They're based in the States. I don't know which one, but they've written a fair number of books.
Mm-hmm.
One of which is called Days of War, Nights of Love.
Oh, okay.
They've got kind of like a, you know, social jamming cookbook that they've come out with, but they're really into smart anarchism, and one thing I like is that they think the most subversive thing they can do is convert old ladies' knitting groups.
Right.
Like it.
I'm wondering
like,
if
like it doesn't matter if you throw Molotov cocktails at a police station, like
right.
The police are still going to dislike you. They're still going to represent the government.
Yeah.
But if you can get, you know, like cashiers at pharmacies and like exactly. knitting groups on your side,
mm-hmm.
Then you've got more power in an interesting way.
Well, because it's ontological anarchy, right?
Yeah.
It's the revolution of everyday life, as Bob Black would put it, right? Where you're diving into, you know, these are regular people, and if you get them to realize their own power,
yeah.
you've got, you know, just a powder keg for complete social revolution.
Yeah. And moreover, you know, there's more everyday people than there are government people. And
right.
If you get the everyday people on your side, that's good.
Yeah.
But CrimeThink is really mm-hmm. Nifty in the cult, let's make a culture movement.
Yeah.
And also the kind of smart, artistic kind of stuff.
Yeah. I that sounds
don't miss this one though.
Oh, which one's that?
Suicide victim jumps, lands on NYC shopper.
Oh!
Oh, no. Were they jumping because they're bankrupt or something?
Oh, yeah. Possibly. hold on. So I'm going to type in CrimeThink and see what I get.
Yeah.
Because it rings a bell, actually, and it immediately reminds me of the Illuminati trilogy, and I'm just wondering if there's a reference
weird link.
Yeah.
One thing, I think they got their name from George Orwell.
Ah, okay.
But one thing I like is that they sent out a message kicking all traveler kids out.
Ah.
You can't be a member of CrimeThink if you're traveling around on Greyhound buses and like experiencing the world.
Right.
Because then you're not revolutionary. Everyone's already done that once. Every like revolutionary group has done that.
Mm-hmm.
They want, you know, people like at Transition Town, right. Peterborough, and this kind of stuff.
Okay. Yes. No, I'm looking at it now, and it's interestingly, they've got it. They spell it THINC. So it's like ink.
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
So it's, CrimeThink with a C at the end there. There's a whole Wikipedia page here. It's interesting because it redirects to, there's CrimeThink, because it has a reference to Thought Crime, which, of course, is the George Orwell thing. It's the CrimeThink Ex-Workers Ex-Collective. Very interesting. Wow.
Yeah, they're cool.
Yeah. Because I mean, I know myself, I'm very much into sort of trying to create regional autonomy.
Yep.
That, you know, that's what we've been sort of cut off from. And why we're, you know, why the power paradigm is in such a sorry shape right now.
Yeah.
Where we're pulled towards this centralized sort of thing. Because I was going to say there's a book by Huckin Bay called Immediatism.
Oh, okay.
In which he talks about the quilting bee as a revolutionary act.
The quilting bee.
Yeah.
Nice.
And it's sort of, it's continuing on where he was talking about temporary autonomous zones.
Yep.
And then evolve that into permanent autonomous networks.
Yep.
Don't forget Lillian Allen and the Revolutionary Tea Party.
That's right. Yeah. And the whole idea of the creative being, right, which is what he was talking about with the quilting bee, right? Where, and in some ways, if you go back historically, this is how women's groups actually did revolutionary things, was through quilting. When they were getting together and doing that quilting stuff, they were discussing, they were planning.
Well, yeah, this is the thing. I knit quite a bit. And when you knit, you get really crazy ideas, and they're cogent. You sit around and you have long conversations about, like, Tibetan Buddhism. Or at least that's the way I knit.
Right. Did you hear the earlier part that me and Brian were talking about? We were talking about knitting.
Oh, no. I wasn't here for that.
Crazy. Because my grandmother was a master knitter, or is a master knitter. Well, she's not very good at right now because her eyesight's gone, and so she has to go by feel, and so
it's kind of sketch.
It slowed her down quite a bit.
Yeah.
Because Brian was asking me about macrame.
Yeah.
Because I do macrame and crocheting, and I never got into knitting because my grandmother was such a master that I always felt like intimidated by the whole thing.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Fair enough.
And then I was mentioning the story of Ram Dass giving this lecture, and this little old lady who was saying that she would experience these, you know, kind of higher states of consciousness through knitting.
Yeah. He's giving a lecture, and this little old lady in like a strawberry hat is going, of course.
Hey.
And at the end of the lecture, he goes like, how did you know about all this stuff?
Yeah.
She's like, well, I crochet.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a good story.
Yeah. And it is. It's about that kind of getting into that. Well, and that's where we got into math and the sort of spiritual roots of mathematics.
Hmm. Groovy.
And Pythagorean theorem, and then that's when I got into talking about zero.
So, and then I came in, and it all just came full circle.
And then it came right back around again.
Well, I have a meeting upstairs, so okay. I think I'm going to go run off, but if you guys could cue something up, that'd be great.
Yep, because we are coming down to the last little bit.
Mm-hmm. I'm meeting someone for dinner.
Okay, so we will wrap up the show and find something to play for you all. Is there any suggestions that you got?
Gypsy Groove is fun.
Okay.
That's a good album.
Okay, well, we're going to throw on some Gypsy Groove, world music here. Oh, look at that. What an amazing casing. Oh, look at that. These things have been playing away. Oh, gotta hit stop first and then open that tray. Push stop on that. We will be back next week. And in the meantime, just to remember that the ArtSpace 5050 is coming up next Saturday, and there will be artwork on display late next week so that you can go in and see if there's something that you would like to purchase. Support ArtSpace, support local artists, etc., etc.
And have a good time.
And also coming up on the 22nd, you can catch the Full Metal Booty at The Spill.
I should point out, before I forget, next Saturday is the last Saturday of the regular radio season.
Yeah.
And the following Friday is the last actual broadcast day.
Okay.
And after that, we're off the air for 1 week or two.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm suspecting two, because I looked at the calendar right there and it doesn't show the start date. And there is a week there so there's a blank week. So
okay,
just my suspicion though. I encourage you folks out there to keep listening.
It is a time of transition.
It is a time of transition. And of course, there's TrentRadio.ca, which it's not the greatest website, but it's informative. All right, so which side did I put this in? On this side. So here is some Gypsy Groove to see you out and see you next week.
Au devoir. Tout ça, igen lacho. Yoide shuka. Igen Jonas.
Hoppa!